local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Lenny Aquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, WGTD Walworth County correspondent Jim McClure, and by Marlo Harmon, a lifelong Racine resident who's currently employed as an addiction counselor at Racine Correctional Institution. And now, here's today's host.
Good morning and welcome to WGTD FM and this our Saturday morning program, Community Matters. I'm Linda Fleshinsky, the host for this week's edition of Community Matters. Statistics demonstrate that more and more people are facing mental health and emotional issues such as depression, bipolar disease, self-medication, addiction, stressful life relationships, family difficulties, grief and loss, and other of life's painful realities. In this challenging dynamic, how do we assist families and individuals who are struggling with life's daunting and often uphill battles? What services are available to them, and how can they access help? Today, we will talk with one of the agencies which has worked over 100 years in the Racine area to make a difference, Family Service of Racine. If you are someone facing family counseling needs or individual struggles, you will benefit from hearing about the work of this agency as we share a discussion with Chip Wood, Executive Director of Family Service of Racine. Welcome, Chip, and thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Let's start with you. How did you end up at Family Service, and what brought you here?
I've been very passionate about serving people my entire life, and once I entered into college, I really needed to find a direction, and that was really just something that was a calling to me to pull out and something that I really thought I could benefit people with. I started out doing street outreach and family counseling at a runaway shelter in Madison called Briar Patch, just a fantastic organization there, but I wanted to do more of that individual one-on-one work. From there, I moved to Waukesha, and we did the mental health crisis line, more of the after-hours unit. So I would get the call when people were thinking about killing themselves and actually had a plan that they were going to put into action, and that was very, very rewarding work. I then kind of figured out that I was a little better at helping people figure out how to do that and helping people help people, and started to drift away from the direct practice and more into the administrative and management. Took over the program director role there and then put a couple other programs under my belt. From there, I transitioned over to Justice 2000 Milwaukee. It's a fantastic organization that helps people that are involved in the criminal justice system. Instead of just sitting in jail, we'd help them get connected with mental health and substance abuse services and kind of monitor them up and through the completion of their trial or however they resolve the case there. I saw the ad for Family Service Racine. They were looking for an executive director, so I applied, and I was very, very honored to be able to join the team in 2011.
Mm-hmm. It's a fantastic agency, and just as a disclaimer, I should say that I was at one time over a decade ago, but I was the associate director under an executive director, of course, so I know a little bit about it, quite a bit about it, maybe. Family Service has had such a diverse history. It's amazing to look at your website, and, you know, people should go to that Family Service of Racine website and just read. But it's had changes over the 100 years, amazingly 100 years that it's been here. So how do you see, what were some of the things that they touched on, and what do you see as kind of the importance of it now?
Like you, I'm really amazed at everything that the agency has done, and something that I've really tried to internalize and continue as director is we're going to be flexible and adaptive and respond to the evolving needs of the community. The agency was founded in 1910 as the Central Association, and it was founded by Henry Wallace and William Horlick. Horlick, of course, was very popular for the Horlick malted milk. It's fantastic.
Right.
Group of individuals got together to push the community forward and really provide some assistance to people in need. They began housing area soldiers returning from the World War. They did social service exchange. They provided nursing services, home visiting services. There was a daycare for a while, boarding house. We decided around 1965, I believe, to start adding mental health services. And I think even back in that day, there was a really prevalent need for people to come in and kind of figure out where they're stuck or find some resolution to some of the difficulties that they're having. And that's a program that we really stuck by beyond that. Throughout the years, we've offered just about everything under the sun. It's just amazing, as you said, to look at the website at fsracine.org and take a look at the huge history that we've had there. When I came on in 2011, we decided to pare down some of the services and really focus on the one thing that we do really, really well, and that's mental health services. Mm-hmm. So we eliminated some of the other programs that were going on at the time and just put all of our eggs in the basket of mental health. And it's really paid off for the community. We've had been able to expand the clinic there and really grow the programs and services around mental health.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think of counseling and mental health as the core of family service. And I think over recent years, it was interesting to say 1965, because I think it's been since those years that that family service has actually been focused on that. And also, as a culture, we've had so many new issues. So how many staff members do you have, and approximately how many people do you help over a month's time or a year's time?
We've got 8 staff right now. There's 3 of us that are administrative, and we have 5 psychotherapists, and we help between 900 and 1,200 people a year. The great data behind that is we can only count unduplicated clients. So there are people that no matter how many times they come, if it's once, if it's every week for the entire year, we only count them once. So the impact that we really have in the community is pretty resounding when we put into the factor that there's a lot of people that come several times, anywhere from 3 sessions to 9 sessions, which is probably the average people that we see, to some people that have a little bit more need and come a lot more mm-hmm. frequently than that. So we're able to help a lot of people, and even the few people that come a lot more often, we're able to help them a little more deeper.
Mm-hmm. It makes sense. Actually, the question should probably be how many sessions, but I know that because some people feel they're helped in a few sessions and they're able to deal better with their life and move on, and some people might have just multiple. A challenging dynamic in our culture overall is really the challenges that face families, I think. You know, we have more divorced parents, single parents, co-parenting, LGBT individuals, domestic violence issues, and just so much more. So in that context, children are often, I'm sure, caught in the middle, and parents are probably particularly stressed in certain circumstances. How do you work with those issues, with family issues?
I think the best response is the key is to approach every individual as a unique individual and to have different circumstances that bring them there, that have different cultural factors and upbringings that really interplay into how we're able to help them. Being able to help families, a lot of times we're able to get them to connect and learn to communicate again. And so oftentimes, especially in this age of technology and being so busy all the time, just that communication piece is often falls by the wayside. Stress and anxiety through a bunch of different factors that can come in, whether that be work, whether that be things going on at home that could possibly be addressed, then too can also come into play a whole lot. Sometimes it's learning how to be able to communicate with the children and be able to set some realistic expectations for them, have some consistent parenting, some good behavioral expectations. Sometimes the children themselves are experiencing some difficulties. There's all sorts of difficulties with the rigor in the classrooms that there are there too. There's so much pressure and expectations, and even the culture of the classroom and the school has changed then too, which can provide some additional stress for the kids. So we're able to kind of approach each one individually, help them figure out what they're going through. And the key part of counseling is we don't fix people. Mm-hmm. We help them set the goals that they want to accomplish and help them map out those measurable steps to be able to do that. And it's really important for us to set some short-term goals that we can accomplish in like 30 days. And then what are some longer-term goals that we want to take a look at? How can we address some of these things that have been more longstanding? They're going to be a little more difficult to resolve, but let's figure out a plan to do that. And it's really exciting to be able to see the clients when they first come in, and you can just see the stress on them and the wear on them and mm-hmm. how difficult things have been. And then even after leaving that first session, being able to know, I have a plan. I know what I'm going to do to be able to resolve some of these things. It's just a monumental experience there, too. I can't tell you how fascinating it is to see people and how mm-hmm. wonderful it is.
That's so wonderfully said, and that's what I always felt about the agency, too. It's amazing the work that you're able to do. Can you tell me about outcomes? Do you measure outcomes, or how do you know if people, what they got out of it, and and have their needs been met.
Absolutely. Data is really, really important to me and to our funders as well. We're a proud partner of the United Way Racine County, and they do a lot of outcome requirements with us. And it's something that we request internally as well, too, because we want to know how we're doing to help people. So some of the things that we measure is, number one, every single appointment, every client is offered a survey for them to be able to complete to let us know how that session went, how they feel they're doing, how they're even feeling emotionally that day. And they have that opportunity to provide that direct feedback that we're able to put into a database. We never share the client's names with the counselor that they're seeing then, too. But we can go each month and say, here's what happened last month. Here are the scores from the surveys that we've got. This is how the clients say you're doing on that particular month. And the great thing with that is because we offer it so frequently, we can actually see the shift in people as they go through the counseling process. So one of the questions that we always ask is if they're feeling emotionally better or more hopeful. Now, if they come in on their first session, it's a 1 to 10 scale, 1 being the absolute worst, 10 being the absolute best, they're probably going to rank themselves somewhere in the lower areas around that time. It's difficult to feel emotionally better or more hopeful, especially when we start stirring up some of those difficult things. A lot of times people leave dormant. But as they progress through the therapy sessions, you can see those scores increasing it more and more. And it's just our therapists do a phenomenal job in those survey aspects there. We also use what's called the Cross-County Symptoms Measurements Tool. It's something that's used by the Diagnostics and Statistical Manual that we use kind of like the handbook for diagnosing and be able to figure out exactly what's going on with the clients, lots of symptoms that are in there. And we're able to take that score and we repeat it every 90 days that the client is in service and then at the time of completion. The great thing about this tool is it's completely driven by the client. They're the ones filling out this score. They're the ones that are rating how they're doing for each of these items. In the past, we used to use a different scale, which was done by the therapist, which is kind of ranking, well, this is what I think you are. And the problem that we had with that is that how the therapist thinks the client is progressing may not be how the client thinks they're progressing. So putting the power back into the client hand is very empowering for us and gives much better results and a much more accurate tool for us to be able to do. We also rate the clients on how they feel they're doing on their goal progression. So like we said earlier, at each time when they first come in for the first appointment, we ask them to set some short and long-term goals. And every 90 days, we touch base with them. How do you think you're doing? It's a mandatory thing that the state of Wisconsin requires for any clinic that's certified through them to do some treatment plan review. How do you think you're doing? Are we doing these goals? Are there different things that we need to modify? Have we completed this goal? Do we need to be able to change it a little bit to come up with different strategies to meet that need? And they're providing that direct feedback again to us. This is how I think we're doing. So a lot of the measurements that we do is directly in the hands of the clients, giving us feedback on how they think we're doing and how they think they're doing. We also monitor the outcomes of the therapist and how many sessions are they completing successfully. Sometimes one of the best indicators for clients if they're not feeling they're doing very well is they just stop showing up. So if we have people that just stop showing up, that's a pretty good indicator as well as they don't feel like they're succeeding in the therapy. They're getting a little bit more frustrated. So that's another thing that we factor into our outcomes and measurements.
That's amazing just how concrete that is and really asking the client how it's going for them. Do most agencies, do you think, you probably, I mean, we probably don't know that, but do most agencies do so much outcome measurement with their clients, do you think?
I think in the different areas that they focus on, they do as much as they can. I know one of our dear friends is NAMI of Racine County, the National Alliance of Mental Illness, and they do a very vigorous amount of outcome and measurements. However, they have to be much more cautious about the way they do it because they protect the identity of their clients. They have to anonymize everything, so it's much more difficult to track the individual progress. But they find workarounds for that to make sure that they are gathering as much data as possible to be able to track how they're doing and how the clients think they're doing, too. So I know that's another big push of the United Way is to make sure that everybody's really hammering down and getting as much concrete data to make sure we're making measurable improvements in the lives of our clients as much as possible.
Wonderful. And I know that you and Family Service are very proud of the collaboration you do with other nonprofit agencies. And as I was thinking about that question, I was thinking, you know, that's an opportunity. What is it, monthly, that you get everyone together and you can share outcomes and lots of other things?
Yes, we We have a monthly executive directors meeting group, which is just fantastic. It's very, I think the touchy-feely way that I like to say it too is it's very organic. There's no agenda for anyone. You come in when your schedule allows you to be able to, and we sit down together and we talk. And we talk about different things that can be affecting our individual agencies, that can be affecting our community, if there's different trends in some of the things that we're seeing, mm-hmm. if there's trends in funding sources, things along that nature. It could be asking a simple question like, we're looking at revising our agency bylaws. Mm-hmm. Does anyone have experience with that? Or we can take a look at the different ways of even doing internal improvements, of restructuring some of the ways that we were talking about board member committees before, and maybe taking it from 5 or 6 different committees with only a couple of people on each and shrinking that down to 2 or 3 and really bolstering it that way. I think one of the most amazing things about the Racine community is there's very few walls or barriers for everything. All the mm-hmm. directors are so open and willing to share all their experiences, their knowledges, their insights, even some of the resources that their agencies have, and that really mm-hmm. allows us to work together in a collaborative approach moving forward. And I think that's something that's
a group of nonprofit exactly. executive directors.
Yep.
Okay.
And I think that's one of the really unique approaches as well about Racine. I worked in several different counties throughout my career, and this is the first one where everybody is not working individually. We are really more focused on what can we do together. We may share some common clients. What can we do to be able to meet this family's needs together? And it's fantastic to be able to pick up the phone and call another director and say, I've got a client I'd like to refer over to you that could really use your services. And they're in the next day or very shortly after, too. Just that willingness to work with everyone and be flexible to really advance the family and the community is just so refreshing
yes.
to see.
And it's hard to be in a crisis situation. I mean, we've all faced crisis situations or depression or something, and then you get an appointment that's 2 months away.
Yeah.
So that's really special. I always thought a misconception, and tell me if this is true or not, about Family Service of Racine is that because you do a sliding scale, no one's really turned away for inability to pay.
Correct.
Sometimes people think it's not a general counseling area. Do you find that to be an issue? And also, how do you make the sliding scale work financially?
It's definitely a challenge to make it work financially, too. That's a commitment that we've made to the community and something that we're very much going to stick by. Thankfully, because of the Affordable Care Act that went into effect a few years ago, we rarely need to use the sliding fee scale because so many people are able to access insurance, whether it
wow.
be state insurance, whether it be employment through the workplace, or whether it be not employment through the workplace, insurance through the workplace, or whether it be buying it on the Affordable Care Act market exchange then too. But when we do run into people that do have that situation, we always base it off of their financial need. We're never going to make someone pay more than they're able to. And thankfully, again, our partnership with the United Way Racine County has just been fantastic to allow us to be able to do that. Mm. Perhaps our biggest struggle, our largest payer source is going to be Medicaid, the public insurance that a lot of people
yes.
get when they're going mm-hmm. through difficult situations. Now, public insurance pays roughly a third of what private insurance pays. Now, when you have 87% of your clients coming into the agency and we're getting a third of what some of the insurance companies mm-hmm. pay for the private insurance, it can make things really difficult because our costs are still the same, but we're getting paid less for what we're able to do. So thankfully, we're able to count on our various funders that come through, some very, very generous donors that private and several that are even anonymous that don't even like to share who they are. They just like to support the mission and things that we do.
Mm-hmm.
We also do a little bit of fundraising on the side. We hold one event a year. But we're trying this year to really push away from fundraising and spend that time and energy that we would into getting auction items or making it a big fancy event back into improving our programs and services. And the results have been really good. Because when it comes down to it in the end, the amount of fundraising that an agency can do is usually just a percentage of what they're able to, what their budget is. And so putting that time and energy back into spreading the good things about the
yes.
agency that we do to really improve inequalities and services, we always think that the best referral source can be from an existing client or a past client. And so if they're pleased with the services that we do and the good things that they're able to accomplish in their lives, they're going to share that with their friends and community members. And so when they run into a similar situation, we will be the first people that they think about.
Uh-huh.
So hopefully that can pay off in the end. And it's turning out very well so far.
That's great. Since you just mentioned events, I think this would be a good time probably to mention your March family, your All-Stars event that you're having, Dancing with Our All-Stars. What is that all about, and when is it being held?
Dancing with Our Stars, it's such a unique event and such a fun one to be a part of, too. We're holding that on Friday, May 19th, starting at 5:30 p.m. It's open to the community. If people would like to come, they can give us a call at the office at 262-634-2391 or reach us on our website at fsracine.org. We're able to partner with the Geisinger Dance Studios, and there's three professional dancers there that are just some of the kindest people in the world, and they donate their time and energy to be able to take six members from the community that really like to be involved in the community and give back, and they come up with a routine, and they practice, and they practice, and they practice. We're getting down to, it's just about a month out now, so people are practicing two or three times a week. And these professional dancers are just amazing. I can't say enough about Guy, Jose, and Tara. They're just phenomenal people. And they make these volunteers from the community that are willing to dedicate their time and energy and sweat, make them feel like they're the best dancers in the world. And when they actually see them at the event, they look like the best dancers in the world. They've been doing it forever. We had someone that came a couple years ago and said, I think we screwed up the routine 30 seconds in, and you never would have guessed it. They just make it flow seamlessly. And so we have the six dancers that compete. We have a nice little plated dinner that comes down at, it's going to be at Memorial Hall this year, and they always have a great job for us, too. We're very, very pleased to work with them as well. So Friday, May 19th.
Friday, May 19th, 5:30, call 634-2391 for tickets, not on Friday, but any other day of the week. And, you know, when you think about you going out for a night, $40 is the price for an individual and $75 for two people, right?
Correct.
So that's very reasonable price for a show. That sounds fascinating.
Absolutely.
Do you still do your March Family First Gala, or did you do that this year?
No, we stepped away from that event, too. It was one that we thought we'd like to take. That was a very time-intensive event put on. So that was one that we stepped away from in our effort to kind of focus more on the programs and services that we do.
A very interesting thing about Family Service is that you now have the Margaret Ann's program, which our listeners will remember, I think, is a program that focuses on grief and loss issues, especially for young people going through the loss of a parent, the loss of a sibling. Does the Family Service staff do that, or is it still the Margaret Ann's program that does it, or how is that situated?
In 2014, when we learned that Margaret Ann's Place was having to close its doors due to some difficulties that we were having, it was one of the fastest phone calls and email votes by the board of directors we've ever taken. It was just such a no-brainer for us to be able to offer to bring that in. And we're really fortunate that the board of directors of Margaret Ann's Place agreed to allow us to continue their services there. We hold it once a month, and the great thing about it is it's completely volunteer-driven. Myself and another staff member always attend, I think, more than anything because we just like doing it, and it's good to have a staff member there as well, too. But we have some of the best volunteers that care so much about these children. And seeing these children when they come in and learning a little bit about some of the difficulties that they've gone through to land them there it just touches your heart. It makes you so sad for them that at such a young age, you have to go through this.
Right.
And so being able to be there and support them through it and having other participants that have been in a similar situation from them is just such a special night. It's my favorite night of the month that we're able to do. Yeah, it's just a fantastic event.
It's wonderful. It's so important. And there are so many, it seems, youth deaths now that it's really an important gap that's being filled there. Are the youth all grouped together? If there are 15-year-olds and 5-year-olds, are they in the same group or are they grouped separately?
We'll break them up by the different age ranges then, too, because it's really difficult to do the same activity with 3 to 7-year-olds as it is with teenagers. There's just a lot of different attention needs and attention span difficulties there, too. So we kind of break them up into a few different groups based on how many people are coming that night.
And it's very activity-oriented and discussion-oriented.
Yeah, we're always trying to connect back to the emotions and the experiences that the children are having, but we also make it fun at the same time. And the kids just love coming back every month, and it's really neat to just see them come back and light up as soon as they walk through the door.
And, you know, to share when you're in a sorrowful place, to share with others who are experiencing that same sorrow is very, very a helpful part of healing. So this program, I understand, is free to all participants, is
absolutely
that right?
Absolutely. Yeah. What we ask is for people to get in touch with the agency. We don't like to share the date and time of the group because we want to make sure that we're able to connect with the family ahead of time, let them know what we're about as the program, too, and make sure where they're at in a grief experience, they're able to connect with where we're at. Sometimes we have people that will want to call right after the death occurs. Mm-hmm. And at that time, it's probably more important for them to tend to their own grief and take care of themselves first. And then after a month or so, when they're able to be a little bit further down the line in the grieving process, they can reach out and really incorporate into the group. And it makes it a much richer experience for everyone. We've had some families that the death occurred several years ago. We've had some where it's been very, very recent. The circumstances of the death also range greatly, whether mm-hmm. sometimes it's murder, sometimes it's a suicide, sometimes it's an illness, something that's occurred throughout the family. Sometimes it's very sudden. Sometimes they know it's coming for a while. But the children, it doesn't seem to matter how it happened, just the fact that they're there together to be able to talk about it.
Yes.
Death is something that not a lot of people like to talk about.
Right.
It makes people feel very uncomfortable because of the emotions associated with it. And so there's not a whole lot of places that these children are able to turn to get the support and be able to talk about it openly. And so letting them be able to share and process through it with the volunteers and with the other participants is just such a rich experience for us.
And for our listeners, again, it's free of charge. And if you're interested in having yourself or a child of yours come to this, call 634-2391 and ask about the Margaret Ann's program. I always think, because I work there, I guess, about the stress of being a counselor. You know, you think of a counselor's day, and maybe they have 6 sessions in a day or 8. So they go to somebody's intense problems, and then they have to close that notebook and go on to the next hour with other intense problems. It must be difficult to be a counselor. And are there ways that counselors help each other, or your agency helps them to cope with the stress of what they're actually going through with all their empathy for their clients?
That's an excellent question, and something that I think anyone in a helping profession, or even parents, caregivers, teachers, anyone that interacts with a lot of people very frequently can run into a situation. And the best recourse for anyone is what we call self-care and being able to take care of yourself. One thing we decided to do at the start of the year is we moved from a Monday through Friday schedule to a Monday through Thursday because
okay.
we were being able to identify that some of the counselors were having some wear and some difficulty being able to be as fresh as they can be or as present as they can be for each individual client throughout the entire week. So moving to that 4-day work week has been really good for our clients and for our staff as well. Better for the clients because we're able to be more energized and more present for them, and better for the staff to be able to have more time to be able to do some self-care and take care of themselves. Setting boundaries is really, really important for any therapist to be able to do, and not only boundaries with the clients about what we're able to do for them, but about what we're able to take on for them and even take in from them. Sometimes sitting through some really intense emotions throughout the day can be really, really challenging, where at one moment you're talking to someone about a depression, next moment you're dealing with someone that's going through domestic violence, the next moment you're going through someone that's in a mental health crisis, and they're having some thoughts and they have a plan about how they're going to kill themselves. It can be really wearing. Mm-hmm. So being able to have very good knowledge of what you have control over, what power you actually have, which is actually very little. We can help people come up with ideas and strategies and plans. We can give them resources, but ultimately the ability to change lies solely with the individual or with the family there. And also having a very good ritual between sessions to be able to take that time, take that breath. Hand washing is a very common one. Are people able to do it? It's almost like an internal and external sign. I am done with this session. I'm brushing this off, and now I'm going to go on to a new one. We have the ability for them to have a very flexible schedule. We're open from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Monday through Thursday. But we allow our counselors to be able to set their own schedules to make sure they're better able to take care of themselves and their needs and be able to, if they want to come in and kind of stagger that out so they have a couple of breaks throughout the day, or if they want to come in a little bit later if they're more of an evening person and be able to sleep in a little bit more in the morning to get some more rest and refreshment, that's always a good thing too. But self-care is something that's an ongoing process that we talk a lot about, and it's something that we pay very close attention mm-hmm. to. We also offer a very generous vacation package for our therapists to be able to.
Nice.
Well, it's just so important. Uh-huh. It helps so many people. We need to make sure that we're taking care of them as they take care of other people, too.
And the counselors must, in a verbal way, interact with each other, too.
Absolutely.
On difficult days. I know people, they talk to each other who, you know, trying to get sort of off their shoulders before they go home at night.
Absolutely.
The whole load that they're carrying, because counselors yep. carry a tremendously heavy, heavy load.
They do.
Yeah.
Yep.
The substance abuse, the opiate addiction thing, is so prevalent across the nation. It's being talked about certainly at the very top of our national level as well as locally, and it's such a tremendous issue now. I know that you are looking at the possibility of doing an AODBA program or working more intensely in the substance abuse area, and I don't think you can say a lot about it, but maybe you could just give us a little preview of what you may be trying to do.
Absolutely. And you're exactly right. Substance abuse has always been something that's been very prevalent in the community. We've seen the opiate crisis that's really exploded over the last couple of years, and it's penetrating into the different schools now, and it's become a really big issue. That's something that needs to be addressed. So we met a few months ago at the board of directors and decided, yes, this is something that the agency would like to investigate and be able to address if possible. The board of directors ran it through the committee system. We all agreed that we'd like to see if we could offer a program to be able to do that. So we started the process. We actually just submitted the paperwork to the state to be able to become certified as an outpatient substance abuse clinic. So we've got about 45 days till we'll hear back from the state. They'll probably want to come and do a site visit and see how we'd operate things, make sure that we have everything well thought out, and we're very hopeful that we'll be able to offer that. What that would mean is at an outpatient level, we would be able to offer up to 12 hours per week of substance abuse counseling to people coming through the program. That's the absolute lowest level of care that can be. It can go all the way up to where it's more of like an intensive outpatient, which is higher than, you know, more frequently, probably between more around 20 hours per week. Or it can be at a day treatment level, which is pretty much, this is your job for the week. You go more between 35 and 45 hours per week, be able just to do substance abuse counseling, but then you go home in the evening, or even up into the residential care setting, which a lot of people call inpatient. And basically you go into a facility and you stay there for usually around 28 days, and then from there you can step down to lower level of cares. We were very intentional in choosing the outpatient level mm-hmm. of setting because we think that's where we can do the most impact. That's where our level of care is for our mental health clinic as well. We're at the outpatient level. Very happy to be certified by the state of Wisconsin, by the way. It's very important for us to mention that too.
Right.
But it seems to be the most effective ability that we can have to make an impact in the community. So people that are just encountering some of these issues, or something comes up and they realize that they're at the place they're willing to change and put some steps into action, we're there for them. If people are stepping down from higher levels of care, we're there to support them in their reentry into the community and kind of help them get back to that new sense of normal without any substances in their lives.
And as you noted, AODA for our listeners is alcohol and other drug abuse issues, but it's just prevalent now. And so I'm really glad to see Family Service attempting to move toward that field too. And I know in general counseling you address it all the time, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
The counselors do, but
yeah.
But to have a program would be really great. For all nonprofit agencies, volunteers seem to be just of growing importance in as budgets get tighter and tighter. Do you need volunteers at Family Service, and how do they serve on boards, committees?
Absolutely, that's a great question. I think one of the unique things about Family Service is very difficult to utilize a lot of volunteers because of the extensive amount of training and education needed to be able to be a psychotherapist. But we are always in need of volunteers to help us with the direction and vision and really pushing the agency forward at the higher level on our board and on our committees. And we can always use volunteers for the Margaret Ann's program as well. On our boards or committees, we meet once a month as a committee and once every other month as a board of directors. I can't say enough about our board of directors. It's such a unique group of individuals that have expertise in a bunch of different areas in the community. And they come together, and I tell you, anytime I have a need or a question there, too, I pick up the phone and I reach out and say, got a question for you. And you can almost sense them. Their world stops. Mm-hmm. There's nothing else going on where their entire focus shifts to being able to help me and to help Family Service move the agency forward. And it is such an incredible feeling to see these people that are so busy and so involved in so many other yes. different aspects of the community. Their world stops to be able to help us and to help our agency. So if anyone's interested, they can, again, call the agency at 634-2391 or get in touch on the website at fsracine.org. Same thing with the Margaret Ann's program. We're always loving to have volunteers that are able to interact with children. There's a training process that goes through for Margaret Ann's program. It's intensive. It's not very long, but it's one of those where the biggest thing is being able to have a big heart and being able to sit with people through some difficult emotions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, volunteering is so important. And, you know, I remember an executive director saying at one time where it was sort of frustrating because we just wanted to get something done and we had to take it to the board and it was going to take a bunch of meetings. He said this, you can actually work more efficiently without a board, he said, but you work more effectively with a board. And I thought that was so well put.
Because very well said.
What, as you noted, the gifts that community individuals bring to a board and bring to an agency is just tremendous.
Absolutely.
I know that Family Service has always had master's level interns. Do you still have master level interns? And how does that work if you do?
Currently, we do not. With the launching of all the work that's going into the application for the substance abuse clinic and some of the expansion of the mental health services, we took a little sabbatical from being able to take on master's level interns, but it's definitely something we're interested in returning back to.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a fascinating process to see people kind of come through and progress from the first time they sit in on a session and just like the look of panic almost going in there, oh my goodness, what is this really going to be like? And going through school, you talk a lot about it and you can even do some role playing, but it's a very different situation when you're actually in the setting and in the session with the person. And then kind of watching them progress all the way through to when they start co-counseling and when they end up taking the lead and they have their own clients to be able to help service them.
Mm-hmm.
We're always very, very big on providing that supervision and feedback with them too. We will never put someone in a session unless they feel comfortable and unless we feel comfortable with them in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
But it's such an important thing to be able to train the next generation of psychotherapists.
Absolutely.
That's definitely something we're going to be returning back to.
Absolutely. And the role model of that, too, of a full-time therapist who's then mentoring a younger person moving
Absolutely.
Into this field. Fantastic. Do you have separate programs for, say, anger management is a huge issue, or depression, of course? Family sessions, are any of those like specifically assigned to a person? Is there an anger management class, or is it more that it goes through the counselor that they're already working with?
Funny you should ask. We're actually relaunching our anger management program.
Ah.
It's a class that we offered for a number of years, and then we had a couple of the referral sources decided that they wanted to take it internally and see if they could do it. But we got some feedback that they'd really like us to relaunch ours. And so the third week in May, we're going to be relaunching anger management class. It's going to be at the agency Wednesdays from 6 to 7 p.m. It's a six-week sessions that we have where it's once a week, and we think it's really important to be able to space it out like that and only have it once per week to allow the individual to really internalize and test out the different techniques and practices that we're asking them to try out and see what they can do. That six-week space out of them gives them lots of time to figure out what's going to work best for them. We do some psychoeducation. It's called kind of sharing a little bit about the different sources of stress and how that can affect the person and different techniques to be able to address that. But I think the real key is being able to figure out exactly what's going to work for you and have that time to put it into practice. And so when they graduate at the end of the six weeks process, they're able to feel confident that they've got a good handle on that. Mm-hmm. We also have the ability, if they feel like they're stuck or they're not able to fully address everything, they can always come into the mental health clinic as well and address it more on a one-on-one basis. We also offer a class called Changing Families, and it's a co-parenting class that we offer in connection with the Racine County court system. And I think this is a very intelligent thing that the court systems has done, is they decided that anyone that is going through separation or divorce must attend this class. And this class is strictly focused on co-parenting through the separation and divorce. We don't want the difficulty of the separation or the divorce to impact the child any more than it absolutely has to. So a lot of it is focusing on being able to communicate what is the child going to experience through this, and how can we support them to make sure that they have as many resources and are able to really express how difficult it is for them as they go through it and for years beyond that.
That's really exciting, Chip, both the anger management, which goes to the core of issues of a whole lot of these things, for instance, family and family court things, too, I imagine. If you get at the anger management, you get at the problem in a lot of cases. Same with criminal activity, too.
Yeah.
You get to anger management, you get to the basics of things. So that's really exciting, and your family program coming up, too. So, a few general questions here at the end, where this time went so fast. What do you see as the biggest challenges that are encountered in your work, and maybe the rewards of your work?
I think the biggest challenge that we run into is people wait so long before they decide to engage in services. And I think there's still a stigma associated with mental health or even getting mental health services. We have some great partners in the community that have been working really hard to address that stigma, and we can really lessen the amount of time that people come in. Right now, according to mental health first aid, it takes a man 8 years beyond identifying they have a problem to actually engage in services on average.
8 years.
So what can we do to lessen that time together? I think the most rewarding thing is being able to watch a client really succeed and be able to, they have a plan to be able to address some of those challenges that they've encountered. They know what works for them. They have the tools and resources to go on and not need us anymore.
Very well said. For our listeners, again, 634-2391, and don't wait so long to get services. You know, there is a huge stigma with mental health issues, as you noted, and just get in there and talk to a counselor, and it'll be greatly helpful. I guess we have to end at this point. So I'll end with a quote by Spencer Kimball, an author. He wrote the following: "The abundant life begins from within and then moves outward to other individuals. If there is richness in us, then we can make a difference in the lives of others, just as key individuals have influenced the lives of each of us for good and made us richer than we would have otherwise been." I would like to thank my guest today, Chip Wood, Executive Director of Family Service of Racine, and its counselors and staff, for your role in making richer the journeys of those experiencing challenges in your own lives. You make a huge difference as you carry on your important work. For that and for being with us today, we thank you, Chip.
Thank you for having me.
And finally, thanks to you, our listeners, for sharing with us your time this Saturday morning. I'm Linda Fleshinsky, and I hope that you will join us here at WGTD every Saturday morning for this program as we explore the important subjects that touch our communities. Because as we all know so well, community matters. Take care.
You've been listening to Community Matters, a program that airs every Saturday morning at 11:15 on WGTD. For an online recording of today's show, log on to WGTD's website at WGTD.org, click Talk, and go to Community Matters. Your gateway to public radio is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.
Jazz, swing, blues, bop, and more from WGTD is available 24 hours a day on your desktop or laptop, smartphone, or radio. To access 24/7 Jazz WGTD on your computer, go to WGTD.org. On your smartphone, download the free WGTD app. In the Kenosha Racine area, 24/7 Jazz HD2 is available via HD radio. And in the Waukegan and Pleasant Prairie areas, the service is being broadcast temporarily over analog radio at 103.3 FM. For more information, call 262-564-3030.
Support for WGTD comes from the Walworth Business Expo and Job Fair at Grand Geneva, April 25th from 9 to noon. Network with other business people or job search. From WCEDA, Walworth County Economic Development Alliance. Information at walworthbusiness.com.
Support for WGTD comes from Andrea's. The arrival of spring means all sorts of exciting new items at Andrea's. We invite you to peruse our beautiful new assortment of springtime apparel, jewelry, table linen.